Hi, this is Jim O'Neill, and welcome to this episode of Practical Azure. In this segment, we'll continue our look at Windows Azure Storage with an overview of table storage. So table storage, as you can see in the feature map here, is part of the overall Windows Azure Storage offering, along with blobs and queues. And so it's accessed via REST-based interface to a storage account URL. Now, we set one of these up in the blob episode a few episodes ago, so you might want to check into that to set up your storage account. What we're going to do next is talk a little bit about what table storage is. And from the name table storage, you might think of relational database tables, and this couldn't be further from the truth. Windows Azure Table Storage is actually what we consider NoSQL storage. And NoSQL storage is essentially non-relational, highly scalable, and efficient storage. It's set up to be structured, so you can think of NoSQL storage kind of like having rows and columns, but each row doesn't have to have the same columns as the row before it. So it's kind of like almost like an Excel spreadsheet where each row and column can have a different data type. It doesn't have the same number of columns for each row and so on. NoSQL storage is kind of taking the cloud world by storm. It's enabling you to do massive amounts of data access and data storage. And in this case, in SQL Azure, or Windows Azure, excuse me, you can store up to 100 terabytes of data in a single storage account. Now, you're sharing that storage with both blobs and queues, but if you choose to just have 100 terabytes of table storage, you can certainly do that. By virtue of the fact that you're using a Windows Azure storage account, what you're getting is, again, the REST-based access, but you're also getting the redundancy. So as we mentioned with blob storage, every byte that you store is stored three times inside that data center, and then if you enable geo-replication, it's also stored off-site three times in essentially a sister data center. So you get a lot of redundancy and disaster recovery capability built in. Now let's take a look at an example of Windows Azure Table Storage with a small sample that I've set up for you. So previously I set up a small table, we're calling it the Customers Table, and I've done this inside of Windows Azure Storage, Table Storage. What I'm using right now is a third-party product called Cloud Storage Studio. It's available from Cerebrata, which is now part of Redgate, and I find it very, very useful to do updates and retrieves and so on table storage. What you're seeing here is a very simple table. It's only got three rows. And each table or each row of the table has a company name, a street, a city, and a state. You'll also notice the first three columns. The first three columns are required on every Windows Azure table. So there's something called a partition key, a row key, and a timestamp. Together, the partition key and the row key are like the unique index of this row in the table. That unique index is essentially the way we look up and do efficient queries. It's also the only index that you can have on this particular table. So the choice of partition and row key is very, very important when we start talking about efficiency and throughput and just managing huge amounts of data effectively inside of Windows Azure Storage. So partition key, row key, most important decision you're going to make when setting up Windows Azure table storage. Now, my partition key in this case is just the state abbreviation, and then the row key is just an arbitrary company ID. What I can do with this particular table is build an application out of it in Visual Studio. So typically you would set up some kind of a cloud service that would access this storage and provide some data to a service recipient through a web service or maybe through an ASP.NET website. I've simplified things a little bit, and this is just going to be a plain old console application that accesses storage directly. So let me go ahead and run the application first so you get an idea of what it does, and it doesn't do a whole lot. This retrieves essentially all of the companies that are in Arizona and just prints out their city, street, and so on. Now, to access the Windows Azure Storage from a .NET client, such as this command line application, you need to add a few references, and those references you can see here. There's an OData reference, a Windows Azure Storage reference, and so on. You can get those from the NuGet gallery, so you can use the package manager side of Windows Azure and add those into your project. Now, looking at the code here, it's fairly simple to follow. I'm setting up a cloud table client, and this is the sort of the connection string back to my storage account. So here's my storage account URL. You can see the table.core.windows.net, the name of the storage account, and this is that that private key that you get access to with inside of the Windows Azure portal. So this sets up my credentials for the client application. And then what I'm doing essentially is retrieving entities from the table. So all I need to do is set up a table reference. This basically says, in this cloud table client, take a look at the customers table. And what I'm going to do with the customers table is set up a new query. So I'm going to set up a new query, and that query is going to return these things called customer entities. So this is a class that I've set up a little bit later in this code that basically maps fields of a particular class inside of my application to the company name, the address, the state, and the zip, or the state and the city. So I'm setting up a where clause essentially here that basically says, give me everything, every company that has a state equal to Arizona, and loop through those results and print out the answers. And if I look at my entity below, it's pretty much what you would expect it to be. It's just a class. It inherits this thing called table entity, and table entity knows about the fact that there's a partition key and a row key and also a timestamp on every table. So it manages that for you. And I declare the additional properties here that I need for that particular entity. And that's pretty much all that happens in terms of running this application, and I get the results, again, just for Arizona because I have a where clause. Now, if I wanted to actually insert something into this table, I can do that as well. So I've got another subroutine here called insert entity, and that does pretty much what you would expect as well. I'm going to create a new one of these customer entities. I'm using the constructor to basically say the partition key is MA. This company is in Massachusetts, and here's its company ID. There's the name, the state, the city, the street, and so on. And again, I got to get a reference to the table. And instead of doing a query this time, I'm actually going to do an insert on that entity that I just created. When I do the insert, I'll get some sort of response. Either it worked or it didn't work. So what I'm doing here is just printing out that response code. Hopefully it will be a 200 type response, which indicates success. If that entity is already there, I'll get a 400 response that basically says, hey, there's some problem. This unique key element was already in the table, and you won't be able to insert a new value, that sort of thing. And then what I do at the end here is just print out everything that's in that particular table. So if I run this with the insert, then I'll get example like this. I get an insert resulted in 201. That's actually a success code. And you can see there says Boston Baked Beans, and it's added that into the table. Now, just to show you what will happen if I try to run it again, that entity is already in there with the combination of Massachusetts and that specific company ID number. So if I run it again, I should get an error. And indeed, I do get a storage exception was unhandled. I'm running in debug mode now, so it's showing me where the exception is. But I can take a look at it in detail, and I should be able to see that there's a 409 conflict, and that basically means that that value is already in the table and you're trying to break the unique key constraint. So that's one quick example, but it's actually not too interesting because this isn't really NoSQL. This is a table that has a very defined structure. Every row is the same. So let's take a look at another example, and I have another table here called Customers 2, which builds on that same data set. But instead of just the company information, I also include information on executives in that particular company. So if you look at the table structure here, it actually looks like each row has about 10 columns. Well, each row definitely has a partition key, row key, and a timestamp, as they all have to. But some rows actually have 4 columns. The company first name, last name, and position column are used by these rows here. Street, city, and state are actually not null. They don't even exist here. It kind of looks like they exist and they just have blank values, but they don't actually exist. And likewise for the company level records, there is no first name, last name, or position, but there is a city, street, and a state. So now we've got two different types of entities in the same table, and it provides some challenges in terms of how do you access this data because you don't know what any given record's going to look like. So let's go over to another application here that I created. Let's stop debugging here. And we'll go over to a second application. And what I've done in this application, let me just run it first so you can kind of see what it does. What it's doing is doing two different queries. So the first query is give me everybody that works for company 100201, and then also give me the name of that company. So it's Flagstaff, Flagpoles, and here are the three executives that work for that company. And then the second query I have is give me the CEOs at all the companies that we know about in this particular table. So two really different queries. So let's take a look and see how the code works for both of those queries. So the first query is get employees, and it's the same model that we saw earlier. We set up a cloud table client, give it the credentials for the storage account, and we get a reference to the table. Here my table is customers two versus just customers, so a different table. We set up a query. So the query condition here is give me all of the companies whose partition key is equal to 100201. So this is Flagstaff Flagpoles. And I'm querying off of a partition key. Now when I get the results back, you'll notice they're not cast to a specific entity type. They're actually coming back as, let me see, show it right here. I don't know if you can see that or not. They come back as a dynamic table entity. So the dynamic table entity doesn't have a predefined structure. What it does have is a partition ID, row key, and a timestamp. But then everything else is sort of pushed into this dictionary of properties. So what I have to do when I query on this table is I have to check and see, does this particular row in the table have a position element? So this is like CEO, CTO, that sort of thing. If it does, then I know it's one of those records that talks about one of the executives. If it doesn't have this position element, then it must be one of the records that talks about the company in general and gives me their city, state, and street address. So I have to check each entity to figure out what type of entity it is and essentially transform it or deal with it directly. So in this case, if it is a CEO or a CTO record, I have to pull out the first name, last name, and the position. And if it happens to just be a company, then I have to just pull out the company name. And that's how we can handle the different types of entities inside of the same table. Now, what's also interesting about this particular query is I've done it off of a partition key. Now, if you look at the other query where we're getting all the CEOs, it's the same model, but I did the query off of the position element inside of the table, so essentially the position column. These two queries will have vastly different performance characteristics. The partition key query will run very, very quickly because the way it's set up inside of Windows Azure is that you'll have a group of essentially processors or if you want to call them roles that are responsible for handling partition keys. Position and any other columns inside of the table are essentially not indexed and will cause a whole full table scan. So doing a query off of a position element is going to be rather slow. It's not here because I've only got a couple of rows in the table, but when you get up into the gigabytes and the terabytes of data, it's going to be painfully slow. And this, again, is why the choice of partition key and row key is so important, because it's important also from query performance. So this should give you a quick overview of how to tackle Windows Azure Table Storage with a .NET client. Of course, we have other clients for Node.js, for PHP, for Python, and so on. And I'll also note that very recently we came out with the 2.0 version of the Windows Azure Storage client, which is what I'm using right here. If you're using the 1.7 version, things are quite different. And I'm just going to refer you to the online documentation for how to deal with some of those legacy constructs in terms of accessing Windows Azure Table Storage. So the demos that I did kind of just scratched the surface, so I wanted to include a couple of additional points to consider as you go about implementing Windows Azure Tables. Now, we've already talked a little bit about the partition and the row key and how important their selection is to the way that your queries perform. Another feature that's part of Windows Azure Table Storage is this concept of entity group transactions. This allows you to actually group about 100 operations per what we call a batch, and that batch will be done atomically. So if you have a bunch of updates you want to do to a number of different entities, you can put those all in one batch and they'll either be done or not done as an atomic operation. Now, one of the keys to entity group transactions is that they will only work if you use the same partition key. So again, picking the partition key is an important aspect of using Windows Azure Storage, and understanding how you're going to be accessing your data is really going to tie into what that partition key and row key are for a given table. And then lastly, for performance reasons, you also want to look into using segmented operations. So in the code that I showed you, we did like an execute or an execute query. And what that will do is it'll essentially flush all the data down from the table. That's okay if you only have 10 rows or 100 or maybe even 1,000 rows. But if you have millions of rows of data, you don't want to essentially flush the whole table, and you want to do it in chunks. So segmented operations allow you to bring down as many as 1,000 rows at a time and do it in a very asynchronous process, so that your end user experience isn't affected by you trying to bring down reams and reams of data at once, and you don't use up all your bandwidth as well as a result. So take a look at some of those capabilities and characteristics of Windows Azure Table Storage as well before you go to implement your solution. And what I'll leave you with, again, is a number of handy links to get your Azure trial, to get the training kit as well, great resources to get your feet wet in all aspects of Windows Azure. A couple of links specific to table service, the table service concepts, how to actually manage access to table service entities. So if you want to put shared access signatures on top of a table so that you can provide limited access to a subset of clients for a limited time, you can do that as well. And I'll leave you with the last link as well. I used a tool called Cloud Storage Studio, so you can get a free version of that from sarahbrada.com, and you can also upgrade that to a more of a professional version that has a lot more bells and whistles too. Thanks for joining me for this session covering Windows Azure Table Storage, and please do join me for the next installment of Practical Azure, where we'll look at the relational side of data storage with Windows Azure SQL Database.